Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
And on the first day, he's like, all right, who wants to be in the G League next year? Anybody? And, like, of course, nobody raises their hand, right? And it's like, exactly. We all either want to be in the NBA or we want to go make hella money overseas. Even the coaches are trying to move up, right? But the best way we can go about that, the best way we can set ourselves up for success at the next level is if we are all in this together and lifting each other up.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today's episode is a special edition of our Member Spotlight. Each week, we select four members to be spotlighted and get to know a little bit more about them, what makes them tick, how they got into the profession, and what their career aspirations are. As the saying goes, it's not about who you know in this profession, it's about who knows you. To be considered for our Member Spotlight, simply join Rising Coaches. Visit risingcoaches.com and sign up for a membership today. All of our members get an opportunity to participate on the Member Spotlight. So please consider signing up so that we can get a chance to get to know you a little bit better. We hope you enjoy today's episode, and please follow along with what we're doing on risingcoaches.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Rising Coaches Association, the biggest coaching tree in all of basketball. Sign up for the Rising Coaches Association now for just $120 a year and become part of our community, relationships, and development. We talk about it all the time. There's no straight lines in this profession. There's only ups and downs. You need a community that knows exactly what you're going through and has been there before to help lean on during the rough times of the industry. You need genuine relationships, not just exchanging numbers, not just meeting new people at the Final Four in the off season. You should be doing it all year round, and we provide tremendous opportunities to create those genuine relationships all through the year. And finally, development. We have so much content and so many resources so that you can work on your craft and become a better coach. Because we put such a premium and an emphasis on helping you establish new, genuine relationships, it takes all of the political BS side of the business out of the equation for you. All of that gets removed off of your plate. You can just worry about being you, making new friends in the business, and working on your craft and becoming the best coach that you can be and impacting the people that you're around on a daily basis. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com/membership. That's risingcoaches.com/membership.
Ben, what's up?
Man, every day's looking the same these days. Nothing new right now.
I know. Life is hard for a G League coach, right?
Oh, man. Let's let's hope I'm still a G League coach. Well, I'll be interested to see if there's a season, when there's a season. I'm just trying to stay busy and stay productive until I know.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into that in a little bit. But first, take us back to the beginning, Ben. Like, tell us a little bit. Obviously, we go way back, too. So, you know, I kind of know your story. But I know your career stops, but I don't know your background before getting into it. So
I grew up with two older brothers, so we were always, like, sports people. And my oldest brother, Matt, he's 8 years older than me. He was a big basketball guy, so he always got me interested in basketball. He was actually one of my assistant coaches in high school for a year, my junior year of high school. So that was kind of interesting. And because I saw him doing that and doing it well, I knew I wanted to coach. When I was thinking about college, I was like, well, what's the best thing for a coaching career? Do I play at a D3 or do I try to be a manager at a D1? So, when I was trying to decide, it was down to try and be a manager at Kansas or play Division III, and I ended up at Southwestern University just outside of Austin where I grew up. And I'm so thankful I played. It was a big-time experience for me.
All right, Ben, give us a scouting report.
Man, I was so unimpressive. I was just an average player. Like,
what position, first of all?
I was kind of a 3-4. We played Princeton offense, so we were four out, one in. I got to do a little bit of everything. I was not a confident shooter in college. I don't know what it was. I think I was a little too willing to take a back seat to some of my to some of the bigger personalities on the team and maybe more aggressive scorers. So I was a good passer, rebounder, defender. My coach told me one time, this was a huge compliment to me. He said, you know, one thing about you, Ben, that I really appreciate is you get it. You understand how to be a great teammate. And I was like, all right, so you don't think I'm much of a scorer or anything. But I'll take it, man. Like, I think it's a skill set, knowing how to be a great teammate. So
glue guy.
Yeah, it's definitely that.
If you had to go back and do it all over again, you would definitely jack way more shots.
Oh, I would have been getting them up, man. Like, I was a shooter in high school. I shot like 45% from three in high school. And then I got to college, and I was just like, I was too willing to take a back seat. We had six seniors when I was a freshman that were all like had taken the program to the next level. And there were like six or seven dudes in the class ahead of me who were really good. One went and played in Europe for a handful of years. And so I was way too passive, man. Then I get into, you know, I start coaching, and every time I play pickup, I just jack that thing.
And making up for a lot.
Yeah, even now in practice, my players are kind of surprised as I sit in the corner and just wait patiently in buckets.
I love it. Okay, so you play Division III basketball for 4 years, and then what?
I actually went and lived in Spain for a year. I taught English over there. I just didn't want to start a career immediately because I knew coaching was what I wanted to do, and I knew I'd hopefully be doing it for like 40 years. So I went and lived in Spain. I was a Spanish minor in college. I wanted to become fluent, and then I hung out over there, and I actually played in like a local provincial league, nothing professional, but it was fun to travel around our province in Spain and play local ball and get called for travels once or twice a game because the rules were different. And so after that, I came back. I got my first job as a D3 assistant, Alfred University in Western New York. I did that for 2 years. Decided I want to try and kind of wanted to make the jump to Division I. That's when I ended up at Rice. I was a volunteer the first year. Got my start with Adam Gerlach and Adam Cohen and those guys. Second year, I luckily got promoted to video coordinator. That's when you and I met. You can tell that story someday if you want to. And then after we got fired there, 3 years at New Mexico as video coordinator, got fired there. And at that point, I knew kind of recruiting was the thing that was holding me back. And so I actually went to Australia for 2 months trying to build a recruiting network. And that fell through. And I was like, forget this recruiting thing. I don't really want to do this. And so I started seeking out every opportunity I could to work at the professional level. And that's when I ended up with RGV, which is Houston's G League team. I was with them for 1 year. And next year was in Chicago, kind of a video role with the Windy City Bulls, and then got promoted to assistant just before last season. So,
yeah, amazing. Okay. Lots of questions for you. First of all, how did you get the D3, like that first assistant job at, what was it, Alfred College in New York?
Alfred University. I think I found it on Hoop Dirt. I think I was looking at everything on Hoop Dirt and just throwing my name at every possible opening.
Just a random, like, no connection, just random.
Yeah, I was kind of looking at things that I thought maybe were attainable. Mm-hmm. And I think what made me stand out in that job was, first off, it was late in the process. It was probably August or late July. And because I had played in a Princeton offense, and that's what this head coach was running, it kind of gave me a leg up, maybe. And I didn't know at the time how fortunate I was to be working for that coach. His name's Dale Wellman. He has since won a national championship at the Division III level at Nebraska Wesleyan. He's a really good coach. And I wish that I had been more aware of how little I knew and how much he knew, because he was great, and that was a real positive experience.
It's always like super fortunate when you get people like that as mentors early, like really, really early in your career.
Oh,
when you don't work for anybody, you know, you just need an opportunity, and you end up with a guy like that. Okay, and then you go volunteer at Rice because you wanted to, you know, coach at the highest level. How, like, do you recommend that to people that want to get into coaching and they talk, you know, they hit you up, whatever? You say, like, hey, you just got to, like, figure it out. You're not going to make any money. Go volunteer somewhere. I mean, it obviously worked out for you, but.
Yeah, it really worked out for me twice because Rice and then my first year in the G League, I was getting paid, like I was getting housing and that was it. I do, on one hand, I recommend it. I think it's sometimes it's just what you got to do, right? But I also hate that that's like the way we do this in our business and really in most businesses. I hate that unpaid internships are a thing. Like, I think it creates such a barrier to entry for a number of people who grow up with maybe a less financial security, right? Like if I had come out of college with any kind of debt, student debt, I'm not where I am right now. Like, I couldn't have taken the awful pay that I did the first few years of coaching. Even at Rice, that year that I volunteered, I was staying at my aunt and uncle's house. Luckily, they live like 2 miles from Rice's campus. And without their support, I don't know if I'm able to do that. So I guess I recommend it for those who are capable, but like for employers, stop doing that. Like, find ways to help your guys out. Like, find ways to help people pay the bills and get a start without having to delay the money years and years down the line. Like,
yeah,
I think we can find a better ways to support young coaches and help get in this business.
No doubt. It is total bullshit. And I don't know that it is other. Do you think it's other businesses too? Like, I feel like it's definitely coaching.
I know for a fact it's coaching. That's the only one I can speak to very confidently. But I know there are other industries that it's the same deal. Anything that has an unpaid internship is crap. Like, just like, especially there's some massive corporations out there. We don't have to get into that. But like, I just know we need to be taking care of people who come.
Let's get into it. Why not?
Like, I don't know. I've been talking about this with Sergio Santa Maria recently. And just like, how can we help young coaches, and for him, young analytics guys, like, how can we help him get a start without having to break the bank? I've seen guys get out of this business because they don't make any money the first like 4 or 5 years that they're doing it.
Yeah. And 4 or 5 years, that's pretty good. Like, some
yeah, that's, I mean, that's on the low end, right? Like, yeah. I'm 10 years in. I haven't made a lot. My best paycheck was when I was at New Mexico, and running camps played a big role in that as well. So I'm thankful that I've had the support that I've had, but I hate that volunteering is like the way in for a non-player, you know?
I know. But at the same time, like, if you're really wanting to get into coaching, like, that's kind of what you have to do.
Yeah, you do. And like, I mean, it worked great for me. It got me in at the Division I level when Division I was like the dream. I was like, holy cow, I'm working at Division I basketball. Let's go. And then I was like, screw it. I want to try the pro level. And same deal, volunteered and it worked out for me. So if you can do it, do it. But as established coaches, like, we gotta do a better job of helping the young kids and create opportunities that don't require not paying the bills, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned two legends that you worked with at Rice, Adam Gearlock and Adam Cohen. You have been lucky to work with like some great people along the way.
Man, the list is long of people that I really appreciate having worked for. You know, Rice, Adam Gearlock was tough on me. He was real tough on me, but he taught me early like what hard work looks like and what attention to detail looks like. Adam Cohen was there too. He was great. And the next year, or excuse me, the first year, I also had Gus Arginal, who is one of my favorite people I've ever worked with. Brian Eskelton, I can say the same thing. And I learned from Ben Braun and Lewis Reyno, who had been in the business for a million years. Like, Ben Braun had 600 plus wins before he was at Rice. Like, the dude's experience, and he was great for me. And then at New Mexico, Noodles was like, man, he was hard on me. He held me accountable and made sure I was paying attention to detail. I love the assistant coaches I worked with there. Alan Huss, Terrence Rencher. Those guys were incredible. They're both at Creighton now, killing it. I think Alan Huss is one of the best assistants in the business. And Terrence Rencher is the funniest guy I've ever met in my life. So I was lucky to work with those guys.
Yeah, what was New Mexico like? Like that, their fan experience looks amazing on TV. I've never been there.
So it's big time because the way Noodles would describe it, and I think it's fairly accurate, is like New Mexico basketball is like the Lakers of that state. Like that program is front and center for everything in that state. You're under scrutiny all the time. You're a massive fish in a real small pond. You know, like New Mexico's population is smaller than Houston. But everybody's obsessed with New Mexico basketball. And I think sometimes that can be toxic if you're not doing well. We didn't live up to the bar had been raised really high right before I got there, three consecutive NCAA tournaments. You're like number 7 in the country at one point, I think. Just silly, silly high standards. And we didn't live up to it. And, man, it wasn't fun. Like, they held us to task. Sure. But when things are rocking, man, they fill that joint. It's the Pit is a great venue. I don't ever need to go back there. Like, I just have, like, stress-related trauma from my time there. I was so stressed all the time. It's funny how once I got to the G League level, man, life mellowed out. And even though there was still just as much hard work to be done, there was just a different level of stress. There was a lot less like self-preservation going on once I got to RGB.
Yeah. So I had a similar deal, you know, working at Clemson and also at Mississippi State, where you are definitely like in the spotlight and people are very aware of what's going on in your program, and there's that pressure. And when you're losing games, you like don't want to go out to eat. You want to like hole up in your apartment or whatever. And then I got to SEMO, and it was like, oh, no one cares. No one gives a shit what we do. This is amazing.
Yeah, it's funny. When we'd go out, we would never, ever tell anybody we worked for Lobo Basketball. We'd be like, yeah, I work in oil and gas, or like, because you just didn't know what could come up. Like, you just never knew who was watching, who was paying attention. It was, you just, I'd rather not give that out and let people judge me all the time. So it was a blessing and a curse to have that support and that criticism.
And by the way, I should just say, I apologize, SEMO Nation, the SEMO fans are great there. They do care, but it's a different level going from like,
oh yeah,
so Mississippi State to Clemson to like a program where you're not on national TV. It's not on every radio station you turn on.
For sure.
The Red Hawks.
It also helped when I got to RGV. I was working for Matt Brazzi, who was like one of the most laid back dudes ever. Like, his leadership style is super empowering. It's, hey, I need you to get this done. I'm going to trust you to get it. You know, it kind of, you kind of get to the point where you're not scared of being yelled at by anybody. Like, if you screw up, you're not going to get yelled at. But you know, Brazzi's one of my boys now. Luckily, all the guys I've worked with at the G League level are guys that I'm going to have lifelong friendships with. And when you are working for guys like that, it's so much about like, man, I don't want to let him down. I want to help him succeed. I want to help our players succeed. And I think that's a healthier approach to your job professionally. It's just like, hey, I really want to kick ass at this for everybody involved, because they deserve my best effort, and I want to see them succeed. And if we all have that mentality, we're all going to lift each other up and do well.
No question. So do you think that has more to do with the leadership style of Matt Brazzi and the people you work with at the pro level, or is some of it like the difference between coaching college and coaching professional?
I think it's a little bit of both. I do think there's a different culture at the professional level, at least in the G League and NBA. And I think it comes from coaches don't have the same kind of stability or hierarchy over players, you know. At the pro level, you got to know how to effectively communicate with players. You got to know how to build relationships. You know, take Houston, for example. If it's between D'Antoni and James Harden, we know D'Antoni's out and James Harden's all good, right? So D'Antoni's got to be really good with James, and that relationship has to be really strong. It's not like at the college level where you don't like a kid, you run him off, and the head coach is there for a few more years.
Sorry, I was just going to ask you, like, so what does that do to, like, the office culture and just the culture amongst the coaches?
Well, I think because you're teaching your players, or, like, you're treating your players that way, I think you're treating staff that way a lot more as well. I think and maybe I've just been blessed at the pro level to be around great guys who they treat everybody with dignity and respect. And that doesn't mean they don't hold you accountable. Jim Boylan holds us accountable. And, you know, if you let him down, he's gonna firmly tell you, like, hey, I need you to do better. You got to do this better, right? But he's not going to yell at you and belittle you or anything like that. And I just think at the college level, like, we put head coaches on a pedestal a bit, and they're able to treat anybody the way they want and get away with it. And obviously that's not everybody. There's a million college coaches who are great about that, and they use that position very responsibly and treat people great. But I do think that having to really have that that relationship with players rubs off on the way you treat the rest of your staff.
And now, a quick break to talk about our partners at Dr. Dish. As off-season approaches, it's the perfect time to upgrade your training equipment. At Rising Coaches, we highly recommend you to check out our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. They are undoubtedly the best and most innovative training machines. Their newest model for schools, the Dr. Dish CT, is a complete game changer. It has a touchscreen that plays training videos, tracks stats by location, and incorporates on-demand workouts and drills from the top programs and trainers in the world. Check them out at drdishbasketball.com or on social media at drdishbball. Mention Rising Coaches before you purchase and receive an additional $300 off your next order.
Speaking of that transition and the difference between, like, coaching college and professional, I remember, like, after you guys got let go in New Mexico, I remember that off season, how stressed you were trying to find something and going to Australia, and, you know, that thing fell through, and you were kind of, you know, scrambling, looking for something. And then you got your opportunity at RGB, and I saw you again the following May for the retreat, the Rising Coaches retreat, which I think that year was that the one in Nashville?
I think that was Nashville. Yeah, it was Nashville.
So, all right, I've talked about this before, but anytime someone goes into, like, coaching professional basketball, the next time I see them, it's like they've been to the Matrix, like they've taken the blue pill or whatever. I don't know, the red pill, I don't know. But they just, like, have this whole nother level of understanding of the game of basketball. And, like, I feel like I'm pretty good X's and O's, but anyone that coaches pro basketball is at, like, I just know they're at a higher level than I am. And so did you, like, experience that? Was it like what was your first year like at RGB? Was it like, you just instantly get thrown into the deep end and it's like drinking from a fire hose, or?
Well, a little bit. Like, it's interesting. I was with Cody Toppert for like 3 days. He was actually kind of instrumental to helping me get on an RGB. And then, like, literally we get down there and 3 days later, he's got an interview with the Northern Arizona Suns for head coach. So, like, anybody who's been around Cody Toppert, which I know you've listened to him speak a number of times, Cody is so brilliant. And he's just, like, throwing bits of information at me. And I was like, oh man, like, I don't know if I'm ready for this. But I'd say about a month in, it was like, all right, no, it's cool. I understand what we're doing here. You know, the guys I worked with were lifting each other up. Like, I think we get to I think every program likes to preach family, right? Like, we're family. You've probably got a hashtag on your shirt that says family or whatever, right? That's the closest I've ever had to that. We're like, we were tight, and it was a super positive environment. It was lifting everybody up. It was Brazi, Joseph Blair, Mahmoud, Abdel Fattah, and Safa Kamalian were kind of our core group of guys. And we, man, like, you could learn something from everybody. Everybody's lifting each other up. And, like, to this day, those guys are my brothers. Like, and I think because we had that, environment, that positivity, it was easier to, like, help each other out and on that learning curve. Because I know Mahmoud had it too a little bit, where at first you're trying to just pick up everything they're throwing at you. But it was probably a month in that I was like, all right, I can do this. This isn't as intimidating as I thought it would be. Things are actually good. Like, I saw my confidence kind of shift. Like, you know what? I can do this. I can do this at this level for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Part of it too is probably like the G League level, I think, is probably, I'm just guessing here because I never coached there. It's probably similar to like JUCO. Like, the bonds are so much tighter because everyone's trying to get out, right? Everyone's trying to level up. The players, the coaches, like, there's something about my JUCO years that, like, those were the closest relationships I've ever had in coaching with the players, with the assist, you know, everybody. Do you think that's like a?
I think that can play a role if you embrace it. It's funny, Damian Cotter, who was our head coach in Windy City this last year, he did a phenomenal job. I learned a ton from him. And on the first day, he's like, "All right, who wants to be in the G League next year? Anybody?" And, like, of course, nobody raises their hand, right? And it's like, exactly. We all either want to be in the NBA or we want to go make hella money overseas. Even the coaches are trying to move up, right? But the best way we can go about that, the best way we can set ourselves up for success at the next level, is if we are all in this together and lifting each other up. If we're not doing that, like, if I put my future over the current success of this team, then I could end up kind of rocking the boat and derailing us a little bit. Whereas if we all buy into, like, let's all do well right here, right now, then we'll be lifting each other up and preparing each other for the next opportunity.
Absolutely.
And we did not win a ton of games this year. We were below 500. But as a coaching staff, we really embraced, like, every single day, we got to do something to help prepare these guys for the next level, whether it's the NBA or overseas. Like, we got to every single day be helping them. And I think players can see right away if you care about their future or not. And if you are invested in their future, then their buy-in is going to be higher. Even if you're losing games, they realize, like, oh, I got to keep doing this, and I got to keep being great so that I can get my next job and make some money in the next spot. You know what I mean?
For sure. All right, Ben, we got a viewer question come in from our guy Max, Maxime Nelaton, all the way in France. Max, what's up, man? I hope you're doing well. You got to get a profile picture. We can't rock with this stick figure over here. But here's your question, Ben. Did you need a small period of time where you had to adapt from the college to the pros in terms of rules, concepts, terminology, organization, et cetera?
Yeah, I had to catch on to terminology. Luckily, it didn't take long. The Rockets terminology, I felt like, was real intuitive, and Brazi was great at teaching it to our players, so I just kind of picked it up as he was teaching our players. I didn't even start working on RGB until like 2 days before training camp, so I didn't get like a head start or anything, but it was all intuitive. It all made sense. I picked it up fairly quickly, but of course then I went to Chicago and you have to learn a whole new set of terminology, and I really value terminology. I pay a lot of attention to that. I think you got to be real clean and organized with that kind of stuff if you're going to be effective teaching your players. So there was a little adjustment, but it wasn't anything crazy.
Great question, Max. All right, so you touched on it at the beginning, but obviously there's no bubble for the G League. And so your guys' season just kind of got cut. So what has life been like, obviously? And I want to talk also about like your new kind of business venture as well. But what has the last few months looked like for you?
Man, Brandon loves to give me a hard time about this. But when the season shut down, I was like, oh, I got a couple weeks free. I'll go visit my girlfriend in Colorado. And so I packed like 7 t-shirts and 4 pairs of shorts and like 2 pairs of pants. And I've been staying in Colorado ever since. I still got the same limited wardrobe out here. But it's been trying to stay productive. Like, how can I keep growing? You know, I don't really want to hassle the Bulls staff or anything like that, because I know they've got a million things to worry about. But there's only so many people allowed in the gym right now for the non-bubble teams. So I'm aching to get back to Chicago and get in the gym with those guys, but you know, there's only like 10 coaches allowed in the gym, so I can't yet. Been trying to stay busy. Like you said, kind of got a new side business. I decided to take some stuff I've worked on in the past, some tools that I made, worksheets that I've used in my own kind of day-to-day workflow during the season, and make those available to other people for a fairly affordable price. You know, calculating some analytics. One just calculates 4 factors. It's real simple. And the other helps with play call efficiency. And play call efficiency is always something that I've valued. Kind of started or strengthened that thought as I was in RGV, where Houston is very offense heavy, very analytics heavy. So I just want to know what we run and is it efficient, and what's working for us and what's not. So I built this tool to help us out in Windy City, and now I've made it available for people to purchase. My company is called Benjamin Sanders Basketball, or it's also bshoopsanalytics.com. If anybody wants to check it out, I appreciate the support. It's kind of a slow moving to start, but you know, I've had a couple clients, and I'm gonna start trying to build that up here pretty soon and see if I can't help out with a little income while we're stuck in a pandemic.
Yeah, and I'm putting the website across the bottom here. If I can figure out how to do this. There it is right there, right? Did I spell that right?
Yep, that's big time. Appreciate that.
Go check it out. It is an unbelievable resource and tool, and it is like crazy affordable. You really should charge more, but I get you.
No, I'm planning on it in the future. I'd say things are kind of in beta right now. I'll bump the prices in the future and add more tools down the line as well. But you know,
get it while it's hot.
Yeah, get it. It's super cheap this season, so
yeah,
take advantage of it.
By the way, if you hear banging in the background, that's Oliver, my 2-year-old. And I'll give you, I know you don't have kids, Ben, but a quick parenting hack that we just discovered. So Oliver's 2, and we got a cardboard box, we got a bunch of golf tees, and he's got this little plastic hammer, and we showed him how to like hammer in the golf tees like nails.
That's nice.
Keeps him busy for like, he loves that thing. So
I've 6 nieces, and a couple of them are still young enough. They might be able to use that. I might throw it at my brother's way.
Yeah, do it. Do it. All right, we had another question come in. This is from Rising Coaches. This is probably Brandon. He wants to know some of your favorite Rising Coaches stories and also favorite members. I think Brandon's just fishing for compliments.
Brandon's definitely fishing. No, like, that's fair. Like, Brandon should be doing that. I think Brandon's helped me definitely with one job. Probably helped me a little bit with RGV as well, but he helped me get on at New Mexico. And it was the summer after we were fired at Rice. I was bouncing around working camps all over. Brian Eskelson was back at Stanford for a hot second. So I was like, I'm going to go out there and work Stanford camp. And I hit up Brandon and was like, hey, can I work your Santa Clara camp? And he was like, absolutely. You know, and that was great for building my relationship with Brandon. And then like a week later, he hit me up and he's like, you still looking for a job? I said, yeah. And he goes, all right, you're going to get a call tomorrow. I was like, from who? And he goes, it's from a Mountain West team. That's all I can tell you. And I was like, please be San Diego State. I would love to live in San Diego. That'd be fantastic. Ended up being
extra and protective of information, so I could totally see that.
It ended up being New Mexico, and it was because Lamont Smith called Sam Scholl. I think that's how it went, and was like, hey, we need a video guy. And Brandon was like, well, Ben was here last week. He needs a job. So I was in New Mexico a week later, literally 1 week. I was pulled into Albuquerque, and so that was great. So Brandon's up there, I guess. He's an okay guy. Jimmy's all right, I suppose. TJ, he's cool. Obviously, Josh Krybik is a big one for me. He's probably my
– You don't say that just because he's your boss.
Well, he's one of my best friends. He is my – like maybe my best friend in the business. These 2 years we've gotten real close. One, because he's my boss, but I don't think he's going to – he would end up being my boss if he weren't one of my really good friends in the business. So it's kind of a, you know, which came first, chicken or the egg type deal. But, man, there's no shortage of people I love in this organization. Like, you know, we sit here and we talk about, oh, we got great clinics and we got great conferences and I love the retreat. But like all that's secondary to the relationships I've built in this organization. And this pandemic, like it's been a different deal as well. Like you guys, I think you guys have done a great job of giving people resources and opportunities to build relationships. I'm at that weird spot in my career where I don't necessarily feel like I've made it exactly. But I have gotten to a point where younger coaches will reach out to me and ask for advice. And I've had a lot of guys do that, that I might not have otherwise. Right. And I was so thankful for the guys who helped me come up in this business. And so I want to be sure to be accessible for the young coaches too, who can, who are coming up, need advice, want to try and navigate the business. And so that's all, you know, that's credit to you guys. Like you guys are doing an incredible job of helping grow this thing and expand this network. And I think you're doing a big service to the basketball community. So props to you guys.
Well, appreciate it, Ben. All right, before we let you go, let's keep pulling on that thread. What is some of the best advice that you give to people, or maybe the best lessons you've learned throughout your time in coaching?
So, you know, you mentioned that summer after we got fired at New Mexico and how I was looking for a job. The biggest thing I learned that summer, because I was everywhere. I went summer league. I went to Peach Jam, the Great American Shootout in Dallas, Vegas, Gerg's camp. I was everywhere I could possibly be. And I think so many times, like, job opportunities come down to being at the right place at the right time. And in order to be at the right place at the right time, it really helps to be at a lot of places at a lot of times. Like just be around the game, right? And so that summer, I had a handful, maybe three or four job offers that summer, whether it was JUCOs or video job, D1 video jobs, all that kind of stuff that I was able to turn down. And it was because somebody hits their friend and says, hey, I need a video guy. And they're like, well, I was hanging out with Ben all last week, right? Or, oh, I just got off the phone with Ben a couple of days ago, or whatever the case may be. So it's be at a lot of places at a lot of times will help you be at the right place at the right time. And then my kind of personal motto in this business is, and maybe in life, is just do two things. If you can do two things really, really well, you'll be all right. And that's work really hard and treat people really well, right? And so we're constantly learning like what hard work looks like. It looks different for everybody. Longer than you're in this business, the more you understand what hard work really is. But when it comes to treating people right, like just be genuine. Like you don't have to be a kiss ass, right? But just be real genuine, treat people really well, care about others' success. Don't be quick to judge anybody or jump on anybody or criticize anybody. Value your players, lift them up, like take care of them, make them. If you're a college coach, like your goal should be to make sure your players are employable when they graduate or when they leave your program. And if you're a professional coach, you leave your players' careers in a better position than when you found them. And I think if you do those things, like it'll work itself out. And I think helping people, going back to my Rice days, giving scouting reports to people when they ask, or giving film to people when they ask, just because they ask, help, it's kind of paying it forward. And ultimately that's how it comes back around to people helping you.
Absolutely. Great stuff, Ben. We just had another comment come in, and it's a plug for your business.
Oh, David, big time. He's my very first customer. I'll never forget it. He might get a discount for life for that.
There you go. You heard it first, David. Hold him to it. Discount for life. All right. I'm going to flash on the screen one more time. BSHoopsAnalytics.com. Check it out. It's a great resource and tool. Ben, it's been fun catching up, man. It's always fun chopping it up with you, but it's fun to do it in a public forum where we can give you some love.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me, man. I'm looking forward to seeing what Brandon and Jimmy and everybody said in the group text right here, because
I know my phone's been buzzing.
They're probably destroying both of us right now, but
no doubt.
It's always good hanging out, Adam. I appreciate talking to you, and I'll talk to you soon, man.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, thank you.
What's up, podcast fans? I want to share some information about one of our partners, Lucio Sports. The team at Lucio has built an integrated platform of coaching productivity and player development apps that are being used by some of the best basketball programs around the globe, helping everyone from NBA champions to youth development academies. Their innovative and competitive memorization games make it so much easier for new players and staff members to remotely get caught up to speed. With animated playbooks, drill libraries, player development planning and monitoring, engaging game plans and scouting reports, predictive play drawing, their content services team, and more, Lucio Sports has got you covered. From players to coaches to support staff and executives, use Lucio Sports to securely keep everyone in your organization on the same page with simple on-demand access to your team's entire knowledge base. For more information, check out luciosports.com. That's LUCEO sports.com.